Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Look on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Thursday in Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. It's Prediction Thursday. It's week 2 in the NFL season, which means put on your thinking caps, Pats fans. And Vikings fans, if you're aboard today, glad to have you. How do you feel about your team? Will they continue their early season run of success? Or will it be a bounce back day for the New England Patriots? Time now to get your predictions all put together and then send them on in. And again, we play a game here on Patriots Playbook, as many of you are now becoming aware, if you didn't know already. An accurate score prediction for Sunday wins you a copy of the Patriots yearbook, the Patriots media guide for 2014. Obviously, we had no winners last week because no one picked Miami to beat New England. And of course, it was 33-20. So consider carefully, even if you pick the Vikings to win, and the Vikings win, and they win by that score, guess what? You're going to win a Patriots yearbook. So that's kind of how we play the game. It's very simple. Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address. Fire off your scores. Let me know what you think. Make sure, however, that you do include your name, and it also helps to know where you're from. You don't have to give us your mailing address or anything, because we'll contact you. We'll either, you know, send you an email or something. But just let us know, you know, where you're writing from, where you're calling from, where you're texting, tweeting, Facebooking, whatever. Where are you coming from? Webradio at patriots.com, the email. 855-PATS-500, toll-free, telephone number, wherever you may be listening. 855-PATS-500. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, is how you can tweet your score prediction, and we'll get it in here. And if you want to do the Facebook thing, absolutely. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. John.Rook on Facebook. And if you haven't submitted the friend request, we'll answer that. You can post Facebook stuff. You can even use the chat function during the programs, and we'll communicate that way. Now, I wanted to share with you to start off the show a couple of actual items that I got from two listeners in off hours during the program, while the program was basically off air. A couple of different things that I wanted to share with you, only because of, basically where they're coming from. This was a really nice one that came from Adam in San Antonio, Texas, who says, first of all, thank you for accepting my friend request. I live in San Antonio now. Hard to catch all of the Patriots games, so I rely on Patriots.com to get all of my news and info. I've been listening to PFW in Progress for 5 years now, but just started listening to your program last year, and I'm sad to have taken so long to catch on to such a good thing. That's a very nice thing to say. You do such a great job. I just want to say, and I think I speak for all who listen, appreciate all the work that you do. Now, that's greatly appreciated. Thank you for taking the time to contribute to the show. I got another one as well. Let me see if I can find it here. From a fan in Germany. Let me see if I can find it here. Yep, this is Chris in Germany. He says, I'm a German Pats fan for 3 years now. Started listening to Patriots Radio during the last season. First to PFW, then after I discovered your show, I pretty much exclusively listen to the Playbook podcast. I prefer yours due to the, well, let's say more scientific approach. I actually just wanted to express my gratitude for the excellent job you do with Playbook. It really lightens up some of the bored time of my day. Again, I appreciate the comments. Thank you. Nice to have a little street cred, huh, Kev? Don't you think? Just to, you know, that's nice from two people who have just, you know, discovered the show in the last couple of years, from relatively far away, one on the other side of the planet in Europe. And so it's always nice to hear. And that's the beauty of doing the whole Facebook thing. A lot of times if you're listening on the podcast later, then it's, you know, you don't know when you're going to be able to listen to the show. Well, then you can obviously, if you're a Facebook friend, then you can give your 2 cents worth, and I'll do my best to read all. Well, I do read all of them, okay? Let me put it this way. I read everything. But if it's really good, I'm going to try to save it rather than delete it from my account and use it on a show. And so that's what I did with those two particular instances from Adam and Chris, because it was great to hear them. Another Chris sends this on Facebook. He says, John, love this show. Have a question for you. Do you have access to the practices? Obviously not the whole thing, but at least the beginning. We, as members of the media, and even though we're technically hired by the team, we're still categorized as media. Whether it's, you know, Paul or Andy or Fred or Eric, we're still categorized as media, which means we have access to the beginning of practice and not a lot beyond that. And they kind of have to treat us, even though we're one and the same, because we're technically team and stadium employees. We really can't have special privileges. Then, you know, the mainstream media, those that work for TV and radio stations outside and newspapers and what have you, magazines, websites, whatever they may be, they'd cry foul. And believe me, if I was on the outside looking in, I would cry foul too. That would be an unfair advantage for us. So we have to be put in with everybody else that's in the media. And that's fine. No one here has a problem with that, because it's up to us to be journalists and do our job to dig and give educated opinion as best as we can based on our observances. So to answer your question, no, we don't see the whole thing. We do see at least the beginning. And that's actually where Eric has gone right now. And for those that, you know, have only tuned into the program recently, Eric Scalavino has been a big part of Patriots Playbook over the last 5 or 6 years since he came on board as a writer for Patriots Football Weekly. And a lot of that is because Fred and Paul and Andy have had sort of a thing going for several years on PFW in Progress. For those of you that have followed the show for a long period of time, you know that. And Eric was the last guy to be added to the staff, and so he has to go out and do a lot of the daily duty stuff, which sometimes keeps him from being on the air with the other guys. And so what we wanted to do was give Eric a voice on this program based on his observances and his practices, and because he's having to work and do his job a lot of times during the PFW in Progress show. Well, this year, the Patriots have kind of changed things around, and their access to the players, in other words, for the media to be able to go into the locker room and talk to the players, has changed this year. That access has changed from roughly 2 to about 2:45 Eastern time after practices. Now, in previous years, it was a lot earlier than that. Usually had access to the players before they went out on the field. This year, the team has changed that to access to the players after they come off of the field from practice, which changes the time that the media has available with the players. And unfortunately, that eats right into Eric's previous showtime. He was normally on in the first hour of Patriots Playbook. So what we've decided we're going to try to do, at least for the foreseeable future, unless the team access, the player access time changes during the course of this year, Eric will go and he will listen to the players. He'll talk, and then he's going to come back here as soon as he's done to give you a flavor of the locker room, to let you know what the guys are thinking, not only about, you know, the game itself, but about the big matchups that we spend all week talking about and about anything else that may be going on. Eric's going to give us the rundown. So he may not be spending as much time with us as he did in the past, but he will still be a part of the program just to give you a flavor of what's going on. Because to me, that has been one of the most important things about the playbook, is being able to give you a flavor for what it's really like here. And whether you live in New England, so you're down the street in Waltham or Walpole, as the case may be, or if you're, you know, on the other side of the world in Afghanistan, it doesn't matter. Listening, we want to give you the same flavor that you can't really get anywhere else. Even if you're listening to local sports talk radio here in Boston and Providence, you're not really going to have that access that we can give you here. And so Eric provides a little bit of that flavor and that access. And so we'll hopefully get a chance to hear from Eric when he gets done in the locker room here in about half an hour from now, and we'll make you privy to that information. Speaking of privy to information, we are locked and loaded in the program today, and we said this right at the tail end of PFW in progress, and we'll repeat it for you here. 2:45, roughly, 30 minutes from now, Brian Murphy of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, who covers the Vikings beat, he will join us here inside the playbook to give the Minnesota point of view. First up off the 3 o'clock hour, our good friend Russell Baxter, Pro Football Guru, ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, and many other, fine publications. Russell Baxter will join us to go through all things NFL in week two. And then right before the tail end of the program, roughly 3:45 Eastern time today, Dan Fouts, the Hall of Fame quarterback from the San Diego Chargers, but of course, those of you know Dan as being, and many of you of a younger age will know Dan as being a analyst for CBS television. He'll be on the CBS broadcast team along with Ian Eagle this Sunday for the Patriots game at Minnesota, and Dan Fouts will join us to give us his 2 cents on the Patriots-Vikings matchup at approximately 3:45 Eastern time this afternoon. So we're locked and loaded. If you have questions for any of the three, now would be a good time to get them in. Webradio@patriots.com would be the best way to do it, although if you want to tweet a short question, do that, at JR Broadcaster. Or go to Facebook, John.Rook. That simple. I've got a couple of things that I want to get in for you. Just before we kind of get going here on the agenda for the day, I think part of what I'm going to get at, and I'm sure that you probably realize that it's the story within the story this week. We're here to talk about the game and the matchup with the Minnesota Vikings. But there's a huge story that's going on in the National Football League now that has to do with credibility. And certainly the Patriots, as a byproduct of being in the NFL, are a part of this. And that is, of course, the independent probe now that the NFL has said they're going to order looking into the Ray Rice situation. And we spent a lot of Tuesday's program here getting your thoughts even on the whole Ray Rice story. And the story has continued to develop as the week has progressed. That is one of the things that we will all obviously do here inside the playbook every week when there's a big story that, you know, touches the NFL and by its very existence is going to touch the Patriots. It speaks to credibility. It speaks to not who's right and wrong. It speaks to whether or not the NFL, I guess, has gotten too big for its britches. Southern phrase. You'll have to excuse my grandmother, that was a phrase that I got from her years ago. Britches are pants, in case you don't know. I can understand where a fan, I can certainly understand where a member of the media might have a problem with NFL credibility overall if what the Associated Press reported yesterday is true, that someone in law enforcement did provide the NFL office with the videotape from inside that elevator that you all saw that has basically rocked the sports world in more ways than one of Ray Rice assaulting his wife, his now wife. I'm not sure. I believe I saw the interview on CBS a couple of nights ago that Commissioner Goodell gave to their partner, CBS, saying that, you know, no one to his knowledge had seen that tape before he handed down the initial two-game suspension to Rice. I believe him. And the reason that I believe him is because he has way too much to lose here if he's lying. Now, that being said, if this investigation, and the NFL has said, okay, we're going to be thorough, we're going to cooperate in every way possible, and they've hired the former director of the FBI and Robert Mueller to conduct this investigation, conduct a probe into how the league has handled the evidence as it investigates these domestic violence claims against Ray Rice and maybe even others. It's going to probably get uglier before it gets a lot prettier here. that if the FBI or, you know, the league comes out and they says, okay, so-and-so in our office did have the video and so-and-so squashed the video. In other words, that's what I think could have happened, and I'm giving you just my own opinion here. But if the AP report, Associated Press report, was correct yesterday and that the NFL office was made privy to this information, yet no one in that office knew about it. And like I said, I believe Commissioner Goodell is telling the truth here. Somebody is the smoking gun, so to speak, in that office that squashed it. I wonder who that would be, why they would do such a thing, what agenda would they possibly have, and does this mean that Commissioner Goodell deserves to be fired for, I don't know, lack of oversight? I don't know what. Frankly, no. And here's why. Everybody is calling the National Organization for Women, calling for his firing. Keith Olbermann at ESPN, whether you like him or you hate him, and I think he's very entertaining, he's been calling for Goodell's firing for a couple of months now, ever since the original suspension was handed down this past spring to Ray Rice. No, I don't think we need to do that. And here's why I don't think we need to do that. And I would be interested in your comments, along with your score predictions for today, if you would like to give me your 2 cents worth on this particular issue. I don't think he needs to be fired because, frankly, is it his job to know what's going on in his league? Absolutely. But the league is too big. There are too many people, way too many people with different agendas, and there's always going to be something that you don't know. What you need to do, however, is if you are a true CEO, and if you're a CEO, you know what I'm talking about here. If you really are a manager, and that's really what Roger Goodell is. Yeah, he's commissioner, czar, whatever you want to call him, but he manages people. So he's entrusted people to do their jobs. Now, does the bottom line fall to him? If somebody has to take blame, then sure. And if the owners decide that Roger Goodell has to go, all right, so be it. But I don't think he needs to be fired by the owners. I think what you obviously have to do is find out why the person who suppressed the tape did so. Clearly that person is going to be out. But I think, you know, in this particular instance, you got to come through with a little bit of a policy on what to do when controversial subjects come up. I would also argue that if Commissioner Goodell had handled the earlier suspension more correctly, in other words, given him a deeper suspension than just the 2 games, none of this would be taking place. None of it. Or certainly very little of it. He's admitted that he erred. He's admitted that he went too light. But based on the information that he had available to him, that's why he said it was a 2-game suspension. And even then, when the 2-game suspension came out, people went crazy. People went nuts. They said, how can you do that? He hit his wife. Or it's clear. I mean, we all know what happened, even though nobody saw what happened. But this is where videotape comes into play. If we see something, we're going to express outrage. Why? Because we witnessed it. We were there. We see the proof. And frankly, I think that's a good thing. I think we should reserve judgment unless we see something with our own eyes. We can go with so much conjecture and so much reporting and so much hearsay, but unless I see something with my own eyes, I'm always going to be reserved in my comments, or I'll put it to you this way. I will attribute my reasoning toward something. In other words, let's say a big story happens. I didn't see the story happen, or I didn't watch the game, or I didn't see the play in particular. So I'm going to say, well, so-and-so from ESPN said this, or so-and-so from the Boston Globe said that, or this was reported by the, you know, Wall Street Journal. I don't know. But I'm going to attribute. That's what journalists are supposed to do. I'm not going to profess to be an expert about everything. I like to think I know a lot. I don't know everything, and nobody knows everything. There's too much stuff out there. Unless your job is to spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, reading everything that there is to read on the internet, you don't know everything either. You don't. Nobody does. So you go to your trusted sources, whatever news sources that might be, whoever you trust. Hopefully we're one of those. And if that's so, I thank you for your trust, and I will try not to let you down. But if you trust the NFL to do right by the fans, to do right by the players, to do right by humanity, in this particular instance, I don't think that we have to, again, throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not so sure that firing Roger Goodell is the step to take. Now, again, he's there at the bequest of the owners. If the owners get together as a group and say, all right, we got to do something here, it's not fair, but we need to give the impression that we're cleaning house and that, you know, this league is above board, and he happens to be the titular head, and so he's got to go, I can understand that point of view, because I've been a victim in my life of what I thought would be an unfair dismissal. It's happened to me. It's probably happened to you. It certainly happened to somebody you know. It's really not your fault. Something happened around you that you're not directly responsible for. You may not even be indirectly responsible for, and yet the dominoes start falling, and your job's on the line in one of those dominoes, and you're out. And it's like, what did I do? Well, that's happened to me. That could still happen this week with Roger Goodell. So rather than jump out on a limb like it seems like everybody's doing here, especially in light of the Associated Press report that says that, you know, the NFL was supplied a copy of the elevator tape prior to the original two-game suspension, I will tell you that whoever got that tape, and whether it's that female whose voice is heard for 7 seconds and she's quoted as saying, you're right, it's terrible. You know, whether it was just that person or it goes deeper than that, we have real problems in the NFL if it goes deeper than that and it was squashed. But if it was just held to one person who failed to make that tape available to those who are in the decision-making process, that's a different story altogether. And I think the next few days, and certainly this FBI investigation, if you will, or the NFL, I should say, investigation conducted by a former FBI director, let's be more specific here, that probe hopefully will get to the bottom of the matter. So let's give it time before saying, oh, off with his head. No, he should be gone. How can you trust him? How can you believe him? No. That's not how you do things. Just like, for instance, I know there are many of you, especially on these slopes and those who are, you know, friends of the United States of America, who are, you know, absolutely apoplectic about the whole terrorism thing that's going on in Syria and Iraq by ISIS, you know, and President Obama came out last night and outlined a very, you know, well-documented plan of attack, so to speak. But right after the second beheading of an American journalist happened a couple of weeks ago, myself included, all I cared about was, you know, knocking some blocks off. And if that meant, you know, going over there and bombing the hell out of them back to the Stone Age, I was all for it. And I got castigated for that stance, and perhaps rightfully so, by some friends of mine on Facebook. You go to my Facebook page and find the argument. I think it's there somewhere. But nevertheless, I need to stay with what I know to be true, and I need to stay. I was angry, and I was upset, and so I'm like, off with their heads. And I don't mean to make light of the subject, okay? I really don't. That's a euphemism that, you know, may or may not be appropriate in this particular instance, but the whole point here is that you need to be a little more careful in your response, and you need to be a little bit more measured in your statements and in your reactions. Your actions and your reactions to others' actions. That's not one of my strong suits. My girlfriend tells me this all the time. She's 110% right. So in this instance, this is what I'm trying to do. Trying to not let my emotions get the best of me. Trying to understand the story. No, he shouldn't be fired right now. Let's wait until everything comes out. In the meantime, it's football. It's business as usual. That's what I think it should be. And we got a game to play on Sunday. I welcome your comments and your thoughts. If you care to share, this is a good place to share them. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. So, in addition to whether or not you believe Roger Goodell should be fired or there should be changes in the way the NFL conducts its business, what are your thoughts on the game? It's that simple. As I look at the history between the Patriots and the Vikings, This is just the 12th time overall and the first time since 2010 that these two teams have even met. Last time they met was here at Gillette. It was on Halloween of 2010. Patriots won 28-18. First time the Patriots ever played in Minneapolis, and I mentioned this on yesterday's show, was back in 1974, and it was a 17-14 win at the old Metropolitan Stadium. That's the only time the Patriots ever played at the old Met. Of course, this is the first time since then that the Patriots will play in Minnesota in an outdoor venue, because since then, it was the Metrodome. It was the Metrodome for a game in 88. It was the Metrodome for a game in 97, and it was the Metrodome for a game in 06. Those are the other three times that the Patriots have played in Minneapolis, and the Patriots lost. Well, let's see, I said they won in 74. They lost in 88, 36-6. They lost in 97, 23-18. But they won in their last appearance in Minneapolis back in 2006, 31-7. So they're 2-2 all time in the state of Minnesota, for what it's worth. But when you play an NFC North team, you know, you don't get that much of a chance to be what I would call a hardened rival. The only loss, 11-game winning streak, as we mentioned in yesterday's show, against teams in the NFC North, and the Patriots will play not only the Vikings, but yes, the Bears, the Lions, the Packers are all coming this year. With the Bears and the Lions, the Bears and the Lions here, the Vikings and the Packers there this year. Last time the Patriots lost to an NFC North team was in 2002, when they lost 28-10 here at Gillette against Green Bay. They have played in two seasons since that time against NFC North teams. That was in 2006 and 2010, and they went 4-0 in both of those. The way that I kind of see this entire thing, and by the way, the all-time series between New England and Minnesota, this is the 12th meeting, as I said. New England leads the series 7-4 for the Vikings. The last Vikings win came in 2000, and it was at Old Foxborough Stadium, 21-13. Since then, the Patriots have won the last three times they have played Minnesota, at Gillette twice in 2002 and 2010, and then, as I said, in the Metrodome in 2006. So it's a 7-4 series lead for the Patriots. Now, where is this game going to break down? To me, I think it breaks down twofold. Number one, can the Patriots do enough to slow down Adrian Peterson all day? That's a huge factor in my book. Now, you know that at least the Patriots' philosophy defensively has been in the past to make another team one-dimensional. So, in other words, they're going to take something away so they know what's coming at them, and that's how they game plan. And for all practical purposes, that has been a solid strategy utilized by Bill Belichick coach teams for a long time to come. And I think that that's got to be a huge part of the equation. I'd be stunned if we saw anything other than a 4-3 look. We'll probably see some changing up because, frankly, that's what the Patriots like to do. And, again, I mentioned this on yesterday's show. If you're just joining us today and didn't get a chance to listen to Wednesday's program, you know they like to change defense. That's why they like the versatility. That's why you like to they like to use 3-4, 4-3. They like to throw different looks at teams because they want teams guessing. But at some point in time, you have to adjust back, and they failed to do that against Miami. That was the problem a week ago. Now, you've got to be able to have enough bulk up front. You've got to have true two-gap guys to be able to control the run so linebackers can make plays, whether you have Dante Hightower in the middle or Gerard Mayo in the middle or what have you. You got to have guys that aren't getting blocked away from the play. And I thought the way that they lined up against Miami last week Miami were feeding right out of their hands. Let's see what kind of changes are made this week. But key number one to getting back on the winning side for New England is slowing down. Notice I didn't say stop because I don't think you can stop. You know, those jet sweeps that Cordero Patterson has been running to some success as well. He's filled that Percy Harvin role that Minnesota had a few years ago and utilized very well, I thought. You've got that to worry about as well. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on the ends, and I certainly think it's going to put a lot of pressure on, you know, whether it's Darrell Revis that gets to mark him, or whether it is a guy like Jamie Collins who's going to come into play. And I mentioned that on yesterday's show as well. Slow him down. If you can stop him, well, that's a bonus. But I don't think anybody stops Peterson. Nobody stops him. You know, last week he got 75 yards rushing against the Rams. I think it's just because the Rams were largely abysmal that, you know, there wasn't an intent necessarily to run him down the Rams' throats. 21 carries, 75 yards a week ago. But nothing was wrong. So slow him down. That's number one. And that's the first focus in the game. Got to be able to get Minnesota off the field. And that was a problem for the Patriots' defense last week. They really couldn't get Miami off the field. First punt didn't come until the fourth quarter, I don't think. So you got to get them off. And if you stuff the run and you make them one-dimensional, they got to throw, that's going to play into what we think would be a Patriots strong suit into the secondary and allow maybe a guy like, you know, Chandler Jones, for instance, to really put back his ears and get around in and put some pressure on Matt Cassel. That's number one. Number two, on the other side, the Patriots need to develop consistency offensively, and that starts with the play in the offensive line. How well does the offensive line control the line of scrimmage against Minnesota? Brian Robinson, who I obviously followed in his college career at Texas, I think he's a great pro, and he concerns me a great deal. If you're looking at Minnesota from a different perspective and from the defensive side of the ball, I also think that defensively for Minnesota, Linval Joseph at tackle, Everson Griffin at the other end, along from Brian Robertson. I do believe that, you know, those guys are more than capable. Anthony Barr at linebacker, all those guys are capable. Those guys are guys that the Patriots need to account for. But let's see continuity within that offensive front. Let's see the Patriots pick a five and then hopefully try to stick with it a little bit, because I think that will help give Brady more confidence. The running backs are going to know what works and what isn't, and I just think that will lead to more positive decisions for the offense as opposed to guessing as to somebody whether or not they're able to do their job. So I want to see continuity on the offensive front for the Patriots, hopefully lead to better things in controlling the line of scrimmage, and you need to see the Patriots' defensive front seven slow down Minnesota's running game. Two huge factors in this game on Sunday. Agree? Disagree? Who else worries you? We talked a little about that in yesterday's show as well. Who else worries you for Minnesota? All big factors coming in. All right. Keep the cards and letters coming here, kids. Your score predictions, webradio at patriots.com. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Let me get a couple of phone calls in here, then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about the Vikings. Trey in Memphis. Thanks for hanging in there, Trey. You're in the playbook.
John, what's up, baby?
Hi, Trey.
Hey, man. Everything that you said, man, as far as, you know, giving Roger Goodell a chance, you know, let this process work itself out, man. I mean, you hit it right on the head, man. I mean, you know, I don't believe that a man that has so much to lose and that's over the greatest sport in the world would just literally, you know, drop the ball. I mean, you know, just disregard a video that came up public on this past Monday. Now, you got that. I just don't believe that he's just that cold-hearted. I mean, I really don't.
I don't either.
I mean, you know, a lot of people are really, you know, they got personal issues with the deal because of how, you know, the harshest penalties that's being against, you know, athletes that is violated, you know, NFL rules. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of people are just really hanging their hats on, you know. So it's like any decision this man makes, you know, everybody, they just, you know, he just can't get anything right.
Right.
And I don't think it's fair.
So that's why I'm glad, Trey, that they have decided to get an independent body here,
right,
led by a former director of the FBI who should know a thing or two about investigations, do this separately so we can conduct the business of actually playing football. And if they discover that there was some sleight of hand, well, then those people will need to pay with their jobs or whatever. But let's let the process go first.
Right. Okay, to get to the game.
Yeah.
I think that if we get early turnovers, man, or get, you know, the good three and outs, man, the offense needs to just go ahead on and just take advantage of it and put the pressure on the Vikings offense. I mean, if we go out and just score when we get the ball, man, I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on Matt Castle. And I don't think, you know, that their offense is, but I don't think that they have enough weapons at receiver to keep up with us if we get up, you know, 2-3 touchdowns. I mean, I don't believe that their offense is that strong. But if you keep the game close, that's when I think they, you know, that they're most dangerous.
Well, Patterson concerns me, and I think that some are forgetting that, you know, the other wideout is Greg Jennings, who certainly has had a good career, but he might be on the downside. I certainly will allow for that. I also think that a big factor in this game could be Kyle Rudolph, and we mentioned him a little bit yesterday as well. He's a big pass-catching, touchdown-scoring tight end, sometimes some would say in the same mold of Rob Gronkowski.
Right. Well, as far as Cordero Patterson goes, I mean, I'm from Tennessee. I had a chance to see this kid in person. If you get physical with him, like those jet sweeps, you go ahead on and stick him one good time, you're not going to have to worry about it. I guarantee it, because I've seen it live, you know, when in college. So, I mean, the jet sweep, you know, that's the least of my concern, because you're only going to, you know, you can only run so many of those anyway.
But you don't want that to turn into a 60-yard touchdown like it did last week against St. Louis either.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, because I remember that play. You had three defenders to wipe each other out.
Okay.
I don't think we're just going to, you know, make that kind of mistake. And as far as my score, I think we're going to win 38-17.
Wow. Okay.
That's my prediction.
38-17.
My prediction, yeah.
All right.
38-17, man. And I think Aaron Dobson is going to boost the passing game.
Okay. We'll find out if he's able to play and on the active list. Trey, good stuff. 38-17. Here's Tyrone in Delaware. Hey, Tyrone, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how is it doing? The last time I spoke to you, I think you was in St. Thomas, my old stomping grounds. I think you was down there for a college basketball game.
I was. I'm glad you're back. Where you been?
Man, I've just been here, you know what I'm saying, not enthusiastic about this season too much, though, to me. Like I said earlier on PFW, I just don't see the talent, man. I'm so sorry. I just don't. This is the first time I feel this way. And, of course, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they're not going to turn it around. That's what the Patriots do. They're going to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
But we talking about Brady getting his fourth Super Bowl, and that's not going to happen, not with that team. That I don't see enough. We don't have – you look at all the elite quarterbacks, right, the ones that is pocket passers, Breeze, Manning, Aaron Rodgers, he's a pocket passer. They all got more talent than Tom Brady. I mean, and this is what wins Super Bowl, more talent, you know. And that's why Seattle was able to beat Denver, because – they had that press, that pressure up front, and they're just giving Manning fits.
Okay.
We don't have that type of defense. We don't have that type of talent. So if we don't have that type of talent, where are we going? And like I said, and this is going to be a shocker. You know, like I said, I know they might turn it around. I'm seeing 10 wins, 11. Well, I see 10 wins this season. I don't know if we're going to win the AFC East. I'm really, because like I said, the three other teams are in our division. Their front seven is better than ours.
Okay.
All the Bills front seven, the Jets front seven.
Well, based on what we've seen, based on what we've seen thus far, it's hard to make that argument, but it is early in the year. Do you have a prediction?
I understand that.
You have a prediction, Tyrone?
My prediction is I see us going on to, I see 27-17. I was really impressed with Minnesota because on the offensive side, of course, they're supposed to do that to St. Louis on the defensive side because their quarterback went down.
Okay.
And it's no continuity. So I wasn't surprised that Minnesota defense was going to shut St. Louis offense down, but I was surprised that Minnesota offense was able to score 34 points on a St. Louis defense, which I think ranks at least last year anyway, top five-ish. They got some defensive studs on that team.
Okay.
And I was kind of surprised that they won that game. And with Castle, you know, maneuverability in their pocket and with no pressure, even though they play 4-3 or 3-4, whatever it is, with no pressure, I think Castle have a good day. And I'm sad to say it, but I really think Minnesota going to get this game in.
All right.
What you think?
27-17 is what you got from Minnesota in that one, Tyrone. Thank you. I will share, you know, my prediction a little bit later on, but right now we're going to pause here for a moment. If you're on the phones, hang in, and we're going to get the thoughts of Brian Murphy, who covers the Vikings for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and he joins us here in the playbook. Brian, thanks for taking some time this afternoon. We do appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with, where you feel like Minnesota's best attribute might be. Let's forget the fact that they went 4-0 in the preseason, because obviously there are varying degrees of effectiveness, I think most people would agree, as to what the preseason really means. But because they got off on such a positive note last week in St. Louis, is there any carryover, do you feel, from that week into this week?
Well, certainly from a confidence standpoint, absolutely. When you're considering Mike Zimmer as a first-year head coach taking over, we got new coordinators on both sides of the ball, kind of a couple of revamped units. As you mentioned, they were 4-0 in the preseason. There were a lot of good vibes, but until they could actually see that put to a test and actually proven in a game that mattered, I think that they gained some confidence from that. But they also played pretty sloppily as well, and they would be the first to acknowledge that. And they were also playing a Rams team that was down to their third-string quarterback to open the second half. So it wasn't exactly a true test. I think they realize that the Patriots are going to be a much truer test as far as how far they've come from last year and what they might be able to do this season.
Perhaps, of course, if the Patriots show up with a team that most everybody around here thought would show up against Miami, and that didn't necessarily happen last week. Because of the Patriots, shall we say, surprisingly disappointing performance last week against Miami, does that give Minnesota any pause for concern, do you feel? Or is this one of those situations where they kind of have to worry about themselves more so than their opponents?
Well, they're worried about themselves, but they're certainly cognizant of the fact that the Patriots haven't started 0-2 since 2000. And I don't think they're expecting sort of a surly team that's going to bounce back after, as you mentioned, sort of a really lame performance, especially in the second half down in Miami. So I think that they are, the Patriots' mystique is certainly deep for a young team like this that's really trying to reset itself after last year's disaster. So I don't think they're taking anything for granted. In fact, if anything, I think they might even be more concerned that the Patriots are 0-1 than if they had actually won in Miami, because they are, it's been 14 years since they've started 0-2 or 0-4 back in 2000.
Sure.
I don't think they expect them to come lay down here.
It's a unique, circumstance. Not only the fact that the Patriots even play in the Vikings, because being in the respective divisions they're located, they just don't get that much of a chance once every 4 years to play each other. But it is kind of unique that Matt Castle, who quarterbacked here for a while, is Minnesota's starter. How comfortable is Minnesota with Matt Castle running things right now, as opposed to a sense of urgency that your first round draft pick and your heir apparent in Teddy Bridgewater is waiting in the wings?
No, they're pretty comfortable. Matt Castle earned this job in the preseason. He did nothing at all to relinquish control of the job that he should have had in more controlled circumstances last year. I mean, a lot of players on offense, particularly Greg Jennings, were outspoken advocates for having Matt play more than he did last year, as they were pulling him in and out between Christian Ponder and even Josh Freeman for one disastrous start. This is his team. This is his huddle. Everybody knows this is going to be Teddy Bridgewater's franchise here in the near term. But for right now, to get this team back, to at least a competitive level in this division, they feel comfortable going with a proven veteran like Castle, that they're not expecting him to throw for 300 yards. They need him to control the clock, control the game, They've got some weapons they can spread the ball around to, and North Turner, one of the better offensive minds in the game, is now running things. If they can just have him be efficient, you know, they feel very comfortable with him.
You know, I think that's really a huge factor in all of this. Again, Brian Murphy, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, joining us here in the playbook. Having North Turner running things offensively, it sounds to me like, you know, with his penchant for finding the big play and stretching the field as he's done in the past, I think that certainly puts an onus on the possibility for trying to create some space, if you will, for a guy like Patterson, or get Peterson into an open field run, or maybe even running direct routes for a guy like Rudolph, who can come up with big plays and has scored touchdowns in the past. Other than Peterson, which clearly is going to, he's going to get New England's primary focus defensively, who's in best equipped, you think, to put some damage on the Patriots defensively?
Well, anybody that watched the game against the Rams, I mean, they ran Cordero Patterson out of the backfield three times for 102 yards, including a 67-yard touchdown run in which he basically blew through tacklers, outraced, outmaneuvered, and then powered through the goal line. I mean, this kid's a complete package. I mean, he's a kick returner and a wide receiver's body. I think in some ways, you know, Peterson had a sort of a pedestrian performance, 75 yards, 3.4 per carry. I think, they may try to get the ball to him, especially looking at what the Dolphins were able to do, especially in the second half on the ground. I think they put up close to 200 yards last week, and Patriots obviously struggled last year against the run as well. So, but that's the thing. They have the ability to, I mean, you may not see Patterson running out of the backfield because, everybody's probably going to be looking for that now.
Yeah.
You mentioned Kyle Rudolph. If anybody's going to benefit from North Turner, it's going to be Kyle Rudolph, who did catch a touchdown last week. I mean, he's deadly in the red zone. He's dropped about 15 pounds, so he's much more light, much more, he's got that Gronkowski ability to run down the field and make plays in the passing game as opposed to just turning around, catching it, getting piled on. I mean, Turner's track record with tight ends is legendary. I mean, he had one great year with Jordan Cameron last year in Cleveland. We know what he did with Antonio Gates in San Diego. Go all the way back to Jay Novacek in Dallas in the early 90s during their glory years. He finds a way to get the ball into playmakers' hands, and Kyle Rudolph is probably one of the best ones right now in the league behind Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham.
What kind of legs does Greg Jennings have left?
Oh, quite a bit. I think, he made a nice catch in the back of the end zone just before the end of the first half to give the Vikings their initial touchdown. But I think he was a guy that when he signed here last year, people were wondering about that. What does he have left? But I think he was underutilized last year, and he'll be the first to admit he just didn't connect with Christian Ponder. And as Ponder struggled, they just could not find a way to get him the ball. But this is a reliable guy in the slot that can make some plays. He's wily enough. He knows how to run his routes. He knows how to get key possession-type completions. You know, if you need a third down converted in the red zone, he's going to find a way to get open. He's not going to be the downfield vertical threat. That's going to be Patterson. But, I don't think there's any reason to believe Jennings is finished. And he certainly has a rapport with Matt Castle. Those two have been connected. I think they got 5 touchdowns between them this year and last year.
Right. Flip it over to the other side, Brian, and there are, two or three guys based on, the limited times that I've seen Minnesota play that I really like defensively. Joseph at tackle, Robinson at defensive end, probably a guy like maybe Barr at linebacker as well. Who, in your estimation, has to have a good game defensively for Minnesota to be able to play up to its capabilities?
Well, Everson Griffin is the defensive end they signed to a $40 million contract to replace Jared Allen, who they allowed to sign with Chicago via free agency. And he has really emerged from his shadow. He had a couple of sacks the other day against the Rams. He had a really monster preseason and training camp. Even playing behind Allen, he showed some huge abilities to get some key sacks. He can randomly drop in coverage. He's got an interception pick six on his resume as well. Very talented, very powerful. I think that's somebody that would probably be worth keeping an eye on. Joseph, pretty stout against the run. I mean, I think you guys have seen him a lot because of the Giants connection, obviously,
right,
the Super Bowl, and also all those preseason games, and he's pretty familiar with it as well. Defensively, you mentioned Anthony Barr, drafted him 9th overall at UCLA. Boy, they really like his athletic abilities. Still learning the linebacker position, but, boy, they can line him up sort of in that Lawrence Taylor role. They can stand him up to pass rush, put him down in a three-point stance. He allows them to kind of mix and match some defensive fronts, so they're almost utilizing him almost as a decoy in some ways. he had a blitz last week that pressured Austin Davis and forced an interception as well. So they're really high on him. But I think the biggest turnaround or the biggest storyline will be the defense. This is largely the same offense that comes back intact, same 11 starters. They scored enough points last year to be in contention. Their defense, though, completely let them down. They allowed 30 points a game and pretty much were last in every defensive category. That's where the true test of this team is going to be. What are they going to be able to do defensively? They got off to a good start, 2 field goals against an inferior Rams team. This will be a bigger test Sunday.
Good stuff. Great insight. Brian, thanks again for sharing with us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
All right, take care. Thanks.
You got it. Brian Murphy, St. Paul Pioneer Press, joining us here on the program. That's really, really good insight. Without knowing a ton about Minnesota, nor would I expect anybody around here really know a lot about Minnesota. That's a guy that can absolutely provide some knowledge. You would follow him on Twitter if you like. It's at Murph P Press. M-U-R-P-H-P Press, at Murph P Press is his Twitter handle if you want to follow him on Twitter. He covers the Vikings for the St. Paul Pioneer Press here in the playbook. All right, let me get back to our business at hand and getting in some predictions here. Let me get a couple out of the way here that have been tweeted across. For some reason, the computer is moving very slow today. Mark says, a bounce-back game, get the C. The Pats win at my first game live this weekend. Pats win 31-20, Mark says, and Gronk has a big game. Let's see, anybody else come through here? Doesn't look like it. All right, so if you want to use Twitter, a good way to go as well for your score prediction. On Facebook, Cody says, hey, John, I'm thinking 34-16. And Cody's Facebooking us from Halifax, Nova Scotia. What else do we have here? There were a couple of others that I wanted to share. Oh, Paul put this up on Facebook, and he says, John, he says, Vikings 27, Pats 20. Unfortunately, last week we couldn't stop the run. This week we face AD. I think the O will be a little better this week, but it will be a long, long day for us on the other side of the ball. So he becomes the second person here on the program to pick Minnesota this week. Interesting. What else do we have here? I think I had one more on Facebook. Sorry, the computer's moving incredibly slow. Jose on Facebook says, Pats win with a late field goal. Low-scoring game, he says, 24-21. Jose, I've been leaning toward your way of thinking all week. Been leaning that way all week. Doesn't mean I'm going to go that route, but I certainly have been leaning that way. All right, let's get back to a couple of phone calls here. Russell Baxter coming up in the playbook, as well as Dan Fouts in hour number 2 of the program a little bit later today. Mary Beth says on Facebook, she says, worried, but I'm going to say 31-28 Pats. Yeah, I'm kind of also thinking it's going to be somewhere in that close vicinity. I'll hold on for just a little while. I've got a score in mind. Going to hold on for just a few before I give it. But I want you to give your score prediction and get in for the contest here and try to win yourself a playbook for or a yearbook for next year. Kevin, the computer has just shut down on me. So I said I was having problems, and everything just went completely blank. So can we take a commercial break, and hopefully we can get everything back up here in a moment? Seriously, it just completely went, now it's back. What's going on here? The gremlins are in. I swear, it just went black, and now it just came back up again. But I can't activate the callers. So we may have to reboot the system here. So stand by. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll see if things clear up. Hour number 2, Patriots Playbook. Patriots, Vikings, coming up right here. We'll continue.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy, one whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country, one that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, And before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
All right, all the gremlins are fixed in the computer and on the call screen and phone lines and everything else. So keep the cards and letters coming, as the saying goes, with your predictions for Sunday's game, the Patriots and the Minnesota Vikings. We welcome into the playbook. There we go. Okay, now it's working. The one and only pro football guru himself, Russell Baxter. Russell, how are we today?
Well, we're on track today because I'm off track and not on the train today. So
yeah.
thanks for bearing with me last week on my excursion down to Washington. People on the Orient Express, say hello. I guess if anybody ever doubted we do the show live, and by the way, the conductor who made it on the air is looking for a residual.
I'll bet he is. Good thing you weren't in the quiet car, my man.
Oh, my, no.
That would never have worked.
Me and the quiet car, that's like jumbo shrimp.
That's not going to
happen.
That's right. Before we take a look at the schedule of games this week, I just, you know, I hate to kind of put you on the spot here, but I'm going to put you on the spot because, frankly, you're well opined in all things National Football League. The Ray Rice story this week and whether or not Roger Goodell should be held responsible, culpable for, whatever sort of demeanor may be permeating itself throughout the NFL. I don't know if we need to go that far, but just kind of like, you know, some of your thoughts on it as you've seen this story unfold, as it actually continues to unfold this week.
Well, I got a couple different spins on it. And first, I think I'm going to dabble a little into societal. We have a habit now, and by the way, congratulations to all 40 or 50 million reporters on this story
right now.
To go along with the 40 or 50 million photographers that are on this story. I want to say that we are in a habit now of when someone does something wrong, and something incredibly wrong, we need to find a second person to pay the price. And whether this is the right comparison or not, but I'm going to draw it anyway. When we had the scandal at Penn State a couple of years ago, when it was all said and done, it almost felt like that Joe Paterno was the guilty party.
Yeah, right.
Whereas it was Jerry Sandusky who did what he did. And right now it seems like we want to make Roger Goodell the guilty party, and he's not the one who swung his fist at his fiance slash wife. And I don't know what the NFL knew. I don't know about this tape. There's a lot of confusion that's going on here. But I also will say this about the NFL, and I mean this in a business sense. These are owners and businessmen who I would think in their wildest dreams over the last 7 years didn't think they were going to have to deal with double homicide, domestic violence, locker room scandal in Miami last year,
bullying,
Bountygate, Spygate, dog fighting. I mean, take your pick. And I almost seems to me that there should be two bodies of discipline in the National Football League offices. One to deal with the violations of policy, which some of them are law-breaking, by the way, and another almost to deal with the criminal aspect that goes on. And say, it's sad to have to say that, okay? And I'm not indicting the intentional National Football League. But you have businessmen who I don't think have ever had to deal with some of these issues.
Well, that's very true. That's very true.
For some of them, I think it's very difficult. Very difficult as a husband, as a father, as a brother, to have to deal with some of these situations. And I don't know if it's a case, John, of putting your head in the sand or looking the other way or thinking that you did your due diligence without having to go any deeper because you really didn't feel comfortable going deeper. I don't think there was any intention here to deceive. Maybe a little naivety and maybe a little fear as much as anything else, because, you know, I saw that tape, as we all did, and I would have feared for a man getting hit like that, or a child, or anybody being struck like that with the kind of rage that Ray Rice did, and then just kind of stood over and didn't, you know, I don't know if he was asking her if he was okay. I don't know what he was saying to her. He's enough to drag her out of an elevator and leave her hit half in, half out.
Right. What do you think about...
It wasn't exactly loaded with remorse.
Right.
And so on. And I think he got his just due, and I think it's going to be difficult for him to get back in this league because that will haunt him forever.
I agree with that.
It's not a story that people talk about. It's a story people can see, and that's a big difference today.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish him and his wife well. I wish anybody who has to go through that well. But I guess I just don't want to get lost, people to get lost in the fact that Ray Rice was the bad guy here.
Right, and because of that, I saw a tweet earlier today from London Fletcher, you know, obviously a linebacker, and he basically said that maybe at the very least Goodell should be suspended by the ownership group until this investigation is completed. I'd be probably come closer to saying that might be the right thing to do, in lieu of him being fired, which the National Organization of Women, for one, has certainly, advocated for here. But at the same time, I still think it loses sight of the fact that, you know, who the real bad guy in this instance was, as you so put.
Yeah. And bottom line is this. If it is proven that Roger Goodell lied, then I understand he should be removed from office.
Right. Right.
If he lied, because I learned this from my father a long time ago. He once told me about a man that didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't cheat on his wife, didn't hit his kids, did his taxes, and only had one major flaw. He was a compulsive liar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, once you lie once, you can lie again. So if there was a lie involved here, then it is certainly understandable. And I don't think an apology helps a lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably right.
It's, I will say this. This is the last thing I'll say on it. I've heard it said that after this happened, that the NFL, I've heard people use the term amended the domestic violence policy.
Mm-hmm.
Did the NFL even have a domestic violence policy?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. That's my point. And I'm going to spin it to the good part of what come out of here. If ignorance resulted in the fact that they had to take a look at this and amend, and listen, there's nothing to say that six games and lifetime ban doesn't turn just into lifetime ban at another's owner's meeting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But at least there's something in place now because I firmly believe there was nothing in place. So a mistake maybe turned into something positive. And obviously, as we know, we got a couple young men who could be in a bad situation because of, you know, similar crimes.
Right. All right.
Or I should say accusations. Ray McDonald has not been
charged.
You know,
yeah.
Charged right. Or anything yet. So.
Correct. Correct. All right. Obviously, it's a story we continue to follow, along with 40 million other people in this country, which, to me, it's sort of, you know, we always say that sports is a microcosm of society, and I really believe we're learning that more so now than maybe at any other point in time in the history of mankind. But the reason for that is because the media is such as it is. I contend, and I've always contended, that things that would probably knock your socks off happened back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s when we didn't have the plethora of social media or even regular media following every move that's made, whether it's on the playing field or, you know, outside of the playing field, that if we knew what we know now about guys who played 30 and 40 years ago, I think we'd be just as shocked.
Could you imagine Babe Ruth with a Twitter account?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. If Twitter existed when Babe Ruth had been playing for the New York Yankees, there is no way he would have lasted as long as he did. He'd have been dead.
I mean, I can see
well before.
Just finished my 25th hot dog. LOL.
Yeah, really. No kidding. No kidding.
Yeah.
Or when Mickey Mantle was out boozing it up with some chick, you know? I mean, come on.
The Playboy mentality that was romanticized today would be villainized.
Oh, absolutely it would be. It was romanticized then, and some of the same things that are being romanticized about are being villainized now. It's just, it's kind of like, you know, and it's because of the media. Everybody has access now, and that's why, you know, when we actually see something like what we saw in that elevator with Ray Lice, it really resonates, because this is something that we're just not privy to as a society.
No, and I hope I never see that again.
No.
I
mean, no, we don't want to see that, and it does need to be dealt with in a proper form or proper way, because if you don't deal with it the right way, then, in effect, you're condoning it, and that can't ever happen. That can't ever happen. It just can't.
I'm going to stay on the positive side, and again, if something positive indeed comes out of this, and further work is done on domestic violence, okay?
Yeah.
Then it will, I don't want to say that worth it term.
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean.
Maybe something really positive can come out of something that I don't know. See, the thing about domestic violence that is tough is because there is, as you know, there's an element of privacy involved in it. And I think as much as you want to police something as a league, okay, there's also an element of this is something involving the home. So I don't know if that made people feel uncomfortable about dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, there's a lot of tentacles here. It's not as cut and dry as everybody wants it. The only cut and dry thing about the whole thing is that he hit her and he's wrong and he's gone.
Yeah.
That's cut and dry.
Yeah. That's very true. All right, we'll move on to football. Tonight, they get the first Thursday night national game, that whole CBS NFL Network package. Steelers playing at the Ravens, and it's the Ravens looking up at the scoreboard as opposed to the Steelers, who opened up with a win last week. And could be an early statement game to be made by the Steelers tonight.
Yeah, and a very, very crucial game for the Baltimore Ravens, John, because as you may or may not know, they opened the season with three straight divisional games,
mm-hmm.
and five of their first eight games are in the division. They opened the season, obviously, at home against Cincinnati and now at home against Pittsburgh. And in a few weeks, they have a back-to-back, I believe, at Cincinnati and at Pittsburgh. So by the time the halfway point of the season is over, they would have already played five of their six divisional games.
Yeah.
Now, I bring that up because, you know, Baltimore is not a great team on the road, not a great team on the road in the division. Lost all of its divisional road games last year. So can you imagine the hole they would dig if they lost their first two home divisional games?
Yeah, that's a huge, you're right. It does put a lot of pressure on the Ravens, no question.
It does. What else puts a lot of pressure on the Ravens is the fact that they ran 85 plays last week, 20 passes, 20 rushes, and 65 pass plays.
Ridiculous.
And I don't care how far behind you are, and I understand Bernard Pierce got benched in the second quarter after a fumble. They put in Justin Forsett. And listen, they came all the way back, which, by the way, was the theme of last week, comebacks,
mm-hmm.
All over the league. Some failed, some successful, but a lot of them were teams couldn't hold leads. But again, Cincinnati goes in and wins that game. The Ravens were not a good running team last year. They're off to a kind of a bad start running the football again this year. We'll see how they fare. I kind of lean Steelers in this game, although I wouldn't be surprised. I'm looking at like a 19-17 score where the Steelers might only score one touchdown and kick four field goals. But here's what I know. This game is going to be 3 points or less, because it always is. The last five meetings and I don't want to say 10 of the last 12 regular season meetings, 3 points or less. It's going to come down to the wire, but this is a crucial game for the Baltimore Ravens. By the way, I would advise Mike Tomlin to stay as far away from the sidelines as humanly possible.
Yeah, right. You can get another controversy there. By the way, the line is Baltimore by 2.5, the last one that I saw. Here's an interesting game, a battle of unbeatens. Dolphins at the Bills on Sunday. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's terrific. And both were in one of those comeback games.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was up 10, let Chicago tie it. They took the lead. Chicago sent it overtime. And then the Bills, courtesy of 193 yards rushing last week.
Yeah.
And that was even without Bryce Brown playing. Anthony Dixon had a big game to go with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson. They don't play in Chicago that often, but it was the first time they won a game in Chicago. Again, it's probably a game that a lot of people didn't think they would win, granted the way they played the preseason, which they looked very, very flat. And, of course, Miami. I don't know what is more startling, that Miami won 33-20 or the fact that they beat New England 23-0 in the second half.
Yeah.
That was the thing that really stood out to me. But, you know, no Sean Moreno obviously likes to run against the New England Patriots. He gouged them last year in that Sunday night game in which New England wound up winning. And, you know, he's not really known as an inside-the-tackles runner. But, boy, did he run hard up the gut in that game last week. And it was interesting to watch Miami. As we know, five new offensive line starters,
mm-hmm.
their week one lineup of a year ago, and they kick off the season in great fashion. And, you know, here are the Dolphins. Talk about important, a road divisional game. They could be 2-0 and 2-0 in the division real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like Miami to continue the momentum. I think they're a 1-point road favorite, and with all due respect to the Bills, we'll see what Miami's made of since they get to go on the road and test it this week. And even though the Bills were impressive in their own right, winning in Chicago, as you suggested. The other AFC East team, New York Jets, winning last week, they get to go on the road, and maybe kind of like we were talking about with the Ravens, this could be a big game for the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, you know, they've had a little time to lick their wounds, and I know the lick their wounds is kind of an expression we say after a team gets beat up. I think it's pretty appropriate here.
Yeah.
You know, I know the Packers wear green like the Jets, but the Packers have more had to be black and blue after playing last week. It was a week ago tonight where they got smacked around by the Seattle Seahawks, and Seattle is obviously capable of doing that to anybody who wanders into their building. But, you know, Brian Bulaga hurt his knee. They already had a new center because of J.C. Treader being hurt. And the fact they can't stop the run, which was a problem for them last year, they lost B.J. Raji at the end of the preseason. They gave up 207 yards on the ground last week. And I don't know how fixed their defense is. I expect the Jets to score some points. But let me know if you've seen a Jets corner wandering around the East Coast anytime. They are very depleted there. I'm looking kind of like Green Bay 38-28, maybe more points than people were expecting.
Wow. Yeah, I kind of expect Green Bay to bounce back as well. I'm not sure they'll score that many points, but I do think they'll definitely try to abuse the Jets in the secondary there without much of a doubt. A couple of other targets that we're going to look at this weekend. One of them being, I think, wow, let's see. Gosh, there's so many that I need to choose from here. Oh, here's one that's an interconference game, if you will, against a future with a future Patriot opponent, against a team that might have been a little surprising as well in its own way last week. Atlanta playing at Cincinnati. Two teams that I think have, well, at least in Atlanta's case, they fancy themselves a playoff team because they were a couple of years ago and failed miserably last year, but they look at themselves this year, I think, as being one of the big bounce-back teams. I happen to think Atlanta will be there as a bounce-back team and be a playoff team this year. Cincinnati's trying to make sure that, hey, don't forget about us in the AFC conversation that is completely focused on Denver and New England.
There's no doubt about it. And the thing about Cincinnati that you have to like is the fact that, I mean, they lost a couple people during free agency, but they're, you know, there's not a lot of teams in this league that have depth. They're one of them because they have drafted so well and kept their core players. And again, they lost Anthony Collins. They lost Michael Johnson in the offseason. But, you know, they have found replacements. They continue, again, like I said, to draft very well. You had to be impressed with what they did last week. I know they struggled to score touchdowns, but the fact that they went into Baltimore, did not commit a turnover, and did not give up a sack. Pretty efficient offense. Andy Dalton threw for 301 yards. And according to that, yeah, crazy bobble touchdown that A.J. Green pulled in for the game winner.
Yeah.
You know, they gave up a lot of passing yards. But, of course, Joe Flacco dropped back a lot last week. As we said, 65 times. They sacked him three times. I love this game this week. I think it's highly intriguing. And talk about what a difference a year makes. Atlanta last year in the first quarter at New Orleans was up 10-0 and then pretty much fell apart for the last 63 quarters of the entire season.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, remember, last Sunday they were down 20-7 to a team that has owned them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people realize that New Orleans had beaten the Falcons 13 of the previous 16 meetings.
Mm-hmm.
ever since Drew Brees got there.
And we're down 20-7 last week.
20-7 when it was all said and done. The fourth-ranked defense from a year ago gave up 568 total yards to the Atlanta Falcons. Matt Ryan set a franchise record throwing 448 yards. They had balance, which was excellent in a game which they were actually behind. And they wind up winning a divisional game at home, which was absolutely huge for their psyche. And I mean, I really think this one is a toss-up. I mean, you've got some good corners with Terrence Newman and Leon Hall going against Julio Jones and Roddy White. But I think the difference, I just talked about Atlanta, Cincinnati not giving up a sack to Baltimore last week.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Atlanta didn't get a sack on Drew Brees last week. And pass rush has, you go back the last 33 games now for the Atlanta Falcons, which is since the beginning of 2012. They have 61 sacks total. And in this day and age, you've got to have a better pass rush than that. So I'd like Cincinnati to win this game maybe a little more comfortably, because I think there'll be a kind of a natural letdown for the Falcons after beating such having such a comeback win over a divisional opponent like that.
Well, next week the Patriots will finally get a chance to play at home. You know, kind of strange to open up with two in a row on the road, but that's what the NFL schedule makers say. And they will play at home against a Raiders team that lost their opener. The Raiders are home this week against the Houston Texans. My question to you is, was last week's win for the Texans a sign of their bounce back because they were so miserable last year? There are still many that feel like they have a playoff caliber team outside of the quarterback area that's intact and ready for a big bounce back season.
Yeah, listen, I mean, the Raiders last week had 158 yards of total offense. They didn't commit a turnover, but they allowed the Jets to run for 212 yards, and that could be very bad news against an Arian Foster and the running attack of Houston. The Texans' offensive line is above average. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick will have some problems against the Raiders' pass rush. There is a lot of experience there. But, you know, this could have been so interesting with Matt Schaub facing his former team. So,
yeah, right.
Now all we get is the franchise that drafted David Carr facing David Carr's brother, Derek Carr. And, you know, and maybe during halftime they'll play reruns of My Mother the Carr.
Might be the most entertaining part of the game.
I know you remember My Mother.
I certainly do, unfortunately. I'm going to age myself tremendously there. Big AFC West game. Chiefs at the Broncos. And Kansas City stubbed its toe last week. If they are going to be a contender, this would certainly be a good place for them to prove it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. But the problem is they won't be a contender. Not to throw cold water on the head. Andy Reid has now been the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs for a total of 18 meaningful games, meaning 17 regular season and one playoff game. And I don't think we'll ever forget that playoff game up 38-10 and wound up losing.
Yeah.
The first nine games of the Andy Reid era, they were 9-0. The last nine games, they're 2-7. And those two wins came over the Oakland Raiders and the Washington Redskins. In the first nine games, Andy Reid's team gave up 111 points. In the last nine games, Andy Reid's team has given up 265 points.
Ooh.
So I know there's a lot of talk about Alex Smith, and he certainly was shorthanded last week. No Dwayne Bowe because of a one-game suspension. He's down an offensive lineman, Donald Stevenson, because of a four-game suspension. They're down on a lot of pieces. I think it's going to be a very long year in Kansas City for the Chiefs. I think they will battle the Raiders for last and not a playoff berth. And they go into a place, Denver. Now, you know, listen, Peyton Manning, who, unless he gets hurt, is going to become the all-time leader in touchdown passes, passing Brett Favre's record. Peyton Manning's never thrown fewer than 26 touchdown passes in any season he's ever played. Okay? And listen, I love historic stats, and sometimes they don't apply, but I will throw out this number. The Chiefs are 6-25 in their last 31 games at Denver.
Probably going to be 6-26.
I mean, six out of 25. I mean, that's 6-25.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And you know, listen, I think Denver had an interesting night against Indianapolis. They did just enough. Again, another team that got out to a big lead and let a team crawl back into it, and they wound up holding them off with a, you know, key interception late in the game. So, killer instinct, not necessarily, you know, what you saw out of a lot of teams. And I kind of blame that, John, on the preseason. This idea of playing the third preseason game all out and then taking the week off, basically, a week before the season, that to me doesn't speak much for conditioning and effective football.
Yeah. No. No, in a lot of ways it certainly doesn't. That brings us then to the Patriots playing the Vikings. Vikings winning on the road at a depleted St. Louis team wasn't so much the surprise. We certainly have opined here all week long about how much of a surprise last week's performance, particularly in the second half, was for New England. And so, like the rest of the National Football League universe, we're waiting to see which Patriot team, trots out to the home of the Minnesota Golden Gophers this next week. Is it the one that actually looked okay? Not great, but okay in the first half against Miami and had a 10-point halftime lead, or a team that nobody recognized in the second half and getting shut out 23-0?
Well, I will say this. The good news for the Patriots last week is that Logan Mankins was in the state of Florida. The bad news is he was in Tampa and not in Miami, and I'm still shaking my head over that one.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. They had problems stopping the run last week. Now, I will also like to point out that you go back to it was either week four or week five when the Bengals hosted the Patriots and beat them 13-6. And Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator for Cincinnati, which ended Tom Brady's 52-game streak of throwing a touchdown pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Mike Zimmer as head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and I was impressed with all facets of the game they played last week. I know who they were playing. I understand how woefully short, but they had five sacks. They ran the ball effectively. By the way, Cordarrelle Patterson, for people who, I know he's a former first-round pick from a year ago. I find this to be a fascinating stat. He is a wide receiver and a kick returner. And he has 10 career touchdowns in 17 games. He has four receiving touchdowns. He has four rushing touchdowns. That rushing touchdown last week was not an aberration. He did that three times last year as a rookie to go along with two kickoff returns. But I can already see the script of this one playing out. What's wrong with the Patriots? Minnesota comes off a 28-point win. They're back home. And I firmly believe they will spend their share of time in the New England backfield.
Yeah.
Because Mike Zimmer knows how to get after a quarterback. Mike Zimmer has redone that defensive line, brought in Linval Joseph from the Giants, who had a sack. Everson Griffin, who has been with the Vikings, but is now the starter in place of Jared Allen. He had a couple of sacks.
Right.
Like I said, good pressure on them. They play a very solid game in all aspects, kind of picked up where they left off in the preseason. You know, and it's not unusual to see a team with a head coaching change in that, and that coach try to win some preseason games, get that winning feeling back, okay?
Right.
I mean, this team is not, I know they made the playoffs in 2012, but this has pretty much been a last place team three of the last 4 years. But I can see Brady getting going down five or six times in this game. And I can also see Tom Brady going down the field late in the game and throwing a game-winning touchdown pass. This is why I have it New England 24, Minnesota 20.
Okay. So the Patriots by just a little bit. And I tend to think it's going to be very close. I think it could go down to a last possession situation. I do agree with you. I think that the Vikings will figure out a way, thanks to Mike Zimmer, will figure out a way to get in the New England backfield often. It's just how well, the Patriots game plan adjusts, because we didn't see any second half adjustment at all against Miami, especially as things were spiraling. And I think there's got to be special attention paid to that this week. So while the Patriots, I'm sure, have a game plan to go up against the Vikings, I'm sure they're going to have plans B and C a little more at the ready this week. And it could provide the difference.
Well, you got some great chess matches here. Obviously, Zimmer we talked about, and Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Of course, Norv Turner is the offensive coordinator now.
Absolutely.
And, Bill Belichick, very familiar with what Norv did in the San Diego days. Certainly some playoff encounters. The playoff encounter in 2007, they played those teams pretty often. And Norv had his good and bad moments against the Patriots. But it's not like there's going to be a lot of surprises here And I think it's a fascinating matchup. And again, I think maybe the Patriots need to get their legs under them a little. You know, with that, you know, losing Logan Mankins late in the game and late in the preseason, I think is a big blow. Because offensive line is about cohesion.
Yep, it is.
And they'll get that cohesion back. And again, it could be a painful week for Tom Brady, because Minnesota is kind of deep on the defensive line with younger guys now. But that doesn't mean, you know, doing it and doing it for all 60 minutes is a different story. And you know, this is still a team. And listen, we didn't even throw in the, you know, we didn't even throw in the, you know, the Matt Cassel factor.
Sure.
Here. Okay. Obviously, he's been with, you know, another team since he left New England. He went to Kansas City. But there's enough webs here to weave a pretty good story. But I don't know if Tom Brady ever won a game against the Minnesota Golden Gophers in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think he's about to win one against the Vikings.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Nice collegiate analogy there. Nice Big Ten analogy. I like that. That's good.
All I've been hearing is the Big Ten's in for rough times this year. Might as well say something nice about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you may be right about that. All right, Russell, as always, great stuff. Look forward to visiting with you again next week.
You got it, sir.
Thanks. Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, Cold Hard Football Facts, Bleacher Report, you see him everywhere, has to do with the NFL, and we're glad we have him here in the playbook on Thursdays to not only touch on the Patriots and their upcoming game, but also touch on select games, games of certainly importance to New England, and in and around big games of the NFL each week here in the Patriots playbook. All right, let's do this. Let's get a couple other calls in here. Try to squeeze in as many other score predictions as we can. Dan Fouts, CBS Sports, he'll be a part of the broadcast team on Sunday for the game in Minneapolis with Ian Eagle. He's going to join us here in approximately 10 minutes. So very quickly, let's get to the phones. And Melvin in Tennessee's been hanging on for an eternity. Thanks for doing that, Melvin.
No problem. What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
I've had a chance to hear a lot of different perspectives. Now, you know, Tuesday, honestly, I would have picked the Vikings. Because the way the team, I don't know if I'm judging, it wasn't them. It was how sloppy we looked, to be honest. But things have kind of changed. Hopefully this is not interfering. So now, I just don't see, the thing is, every time I've seen them look like that, which that was one of the worst ones, I can say.
Okay.
Because I didn't even see the first half. I saw the second half. I was looking for, you know, honestly, I was watching TV. I was relaxing. I watched one more touchdown, and I was going out to the beach with my girl.
Okay.
Yeah. Plans completely changed. I went to sleep.
Yeah.
I was so upset. So, with that being said, I think we're gonna bounce back. I don't see a lot of those problems being an issue this week. If we were to lose this week, though, from a standpoint of leadership and I mean what's going on with the team, I would be very concerned because I don't see. I think that speaks a lot to do with leadership. Really?
Okay.
If you get beat like that and something like that was to go on, I mean, what's the message for next week? I don't see them. And that's, I think, that the coaching thing, leadership thing, I think that the players have developed that. I don't see them looking like that two games in a row. And if they can't stop this type of offense, I know the Vikings are. I've heard everything. I watched Cordarrelle Patterson just like Trey in Tennessee. So I've watched them a lot. If we can't stop that still, I think that's a huge problem.
All right. What do you think then about a score for Sunday?
I think the score, I don't know how many times I say this, but I really think it's going to be about 27-17. It should not be. I feel like we should win. No, I wouldn't say comfortably. I think maybe we get a last seven to put us away and you know, they kind of go dry, but I really think 27-17.
Okay.
So that's my score. That's what I'm hoping. I think we do better with tackling. I think we shut them down and make Castle throw, and therefore the game kind of leans in our direction. We kind of take AB out of the game a little bit.
All right. So, good stuff, Melvin. Thanks, man.
I'll talk to you later.
Always appreciate your opinion. Here's Eldridge in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging on, Eldridge.
Hey, John, thank you, man. Thank you. I hate to say this, but I'm going 27-24 us. But I'm going to hate to see my number one draft pick give us a dickens of a time Sunday. That's Cordell Patterson.
Yep.
We should have had. Who we should have had sitting right there.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people that would agree with the Eldridge, but not a whole lot we can do about that.
No, nothing we can do about that one now. Because I told Andy and him a year ago, wait, compare him to Dobson and Tompkins and Boyd in 2 years. I said, if not him, Justin Hunter or Derrick Rogers, either one of those three from Tennessee would help this team out tremendously. So everybody laughed at me, but they ain't laughing now.
Yeah.
They ain't laughing now.
Sure.
So I'm thinking it's 27-24. Like you said, come down to the last couple minutes, and Steven kicks the field goal.
Okay.
You know, and that's what I think.
All right.
And thank you.
27-24, says Eldridge in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging on, guys, as well. To get to some of those of you that have emailed your score predictions in, Steve in Killeen, Texas, says, I'm going to go with 21-16 Patriots over Vikings. Pats find a way to play the full 60 minutes and get it done. And if the kicker is if the Pats pull this one out, Texas Briskets will be sent to answer Zoe's question of where's the beef? Uh-oh. That could be dangerous. That could be real dangerous. But thank you, Steve. Glenn in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Pats win 23-17. Ian from the UK. John, I predict the Patriots to bounce back this week. We're always good when we come off a loss. Generally speaking, I can't argue with that. He says, apart from our run defense, our O-line, and Brady not spreading the ball, one of the keys to this game is stop the stupid penalties that killed us against the Dolphins. Agreed with that. Prediction is a close game, 23-16 to the Patriots. David in Denver. John, I'm not getting too carried away with last week for a couple of reasons. First, I think Brady is playing at a high level, regardless of his stats from last week. Stats are skewed because of the awful performance from the offensive line. In the first half, Brady looked very accurate, even had a really nice deep throw to Edelman. Belichick is the master of adjustments. I'm confident that he will address the issues on the offensive line. Didn't adjust very well last week, though, did he, David? When the offense doesn't get taken off the field in a three and out every single drive, the defense won't get winded in the second half as they did last week. They'll perform more like they did in the first half, create some turnovers at the right moments in a bend-but-not-break scheme. I still expect our rush D to be less than great, so Peterson and Patterson will have some production. The difference this week, we get some pressure from the edge. Vikings will score points, but not enough to outscore the Pats. Big statement game to the NFL. Patriots win 38-24, says David in Denver. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. Goodell should not be fired. I agree, had he been stricter with the original punishment, then this wouldn't be the hot topic it is. The person who suppressed the video should be fired and a new policy put in place on how to handle situations like this. 110% correct. And he says, Pats 31, Vikings 21. 31-21. Thank you, Howard. James in Ellensburg, Washington says, prediction, Patriots 34, Vikings 17. I'd like your thoughts on the running game. I know the line is a work in progress, but do you think the Pats will look into possibly trading or looking into a new running back if the chance is presented? Or do you believe the committee will be the answer for this year? I know it's only been one game, but we did see this last year. And no, Goodell shouldn't be fired. All big organizations are shady. We'll never really know what happened or happens, including the NFL. Certainly one way to look at it, I guess, the pessimistic view. Thank you, James. You know, looking into possibly trading or looking into a new running back, honestly, I think that they like the guys they have. I think they drafted a young man in James White from Washington who they have, you know, great belief in. Now may not be his time, but I still think that they believe that he could be an eventual answer there. Again, going to have to let it play out, as you suggested, more than just 1 week, but that being said, I don't know that they're going to do anything drastic or radical unless, of course, an injury happens this year to the running back core. I think that they're, you know, they certainly like Stephen Ridley and they like Shane Vereen and his role on third down, and they're waiting for James White to assert himself and maybe take the job from one or both of those guys at some point in time. Okay. Time now to switch directions back to a specific focus on the game on Sunday. Don't forget, of course, we've got Thursday Night Football on CBS and the NFL Network, which comes up tonight. Thursday Night Football tonight, Steelers and Ravens. But for Sunday's game in Minnesota, the analyst, along with Ian Eagle, for the NFL on CBS, calling Patriots and Vikings on Sunday, the Hall of Fame quarterback Dan Fouts joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Dan, thanks so much for the time today. We sure appreciate it.
Oh, you got it, man. Good to be with you.
Nice to be with you. Well, you know, how surprised were you to see the second half collapse that we all saw, the Patriots try to endure it with Miami? Was that more New England's fault, or was that more Miami playing exceedingly well in your thoughts this week?
Well, probably a little bit of both. I mean, when you look at Miami, the way they played in the second half, it was almost as if they knew they could wear down New England with the heat and the humidity and the style of play that they were playing. When a team continues to rush the ball and improve as the game goes on, you got to look at the factor of conditioning a little bit. And we all know how stifling that those conditions can be in Miami. And I think that contributed greatly to the success the Dolphins had.
Yeah, they you know, the Patriots had a set way about them. And I think the one thing that we've been talking about all week here was, in the past, we've seen the Patriots adjust to how the other team adjusts to them. We didn't really see those adjustments take place in the second half, which is one of the reasons why Miami was so effective. You can perhaps provide some insight into game planning, because you've been a huge part of this throughout, you know, your entire career as a player as well. When generally do coaches decide, okay, we need to adjust, as opposed to, nope, let's stay the course here? Because last week we thought, cried out for an adjustment, yet nothing happened. What are your thoughts?
Well, adjustments happen throughout a game, and I'm sure that the Patriots were adjusting. They just weren't executing. I mean, you know, you have your time at halftime when you can sit around and really discuss things and look at all the pictures you have and all the, you know, the Microsoft things on the sidelines. But it really, adjustments happen all the time, and I'm sure that the Patriots were trying to do that. It's just that the adjustments that Miami were making and the way that they grabbed momentum, both on offense and on defense, just made it difficult for the Patriots to adjust.
Patriots were kind of a half a step behind the whole game then, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the way the lack of pass protection, the lack of running lanes offensively, you know, the offensive line was beat. And when you look at the other side of the ball, you think that the defensive line and the secondary and the linebackers, the whole defense was beat. So you got to hand it to Miami. They came out, played their style of game, which, you know, with a new offensive coordinator and all the things that go into that, they got a great performance out of Knowshon Moreno. And really the momentum, they never seemed, after halftime, they grabbed the momentum and never let it go.
They certainly did that. Dan Fouts from the NFL on CBS joining us here inside the playbook, as he'll be a part of the announced team on Sunday for the Patriots game at Minnesota. And you just mentioned Knowshon Moreno, and the Patriots will have a huge task on hand and try to slow down a guy like Adrian Peterson in the Vikings running game on Sunday. He's the kind of guy, though, and I know you probably know this as well as anyone, as you look at videotape for this week, that you really can't stop. You can only hope to slow down, in other words. Is this still a winnable game if you only slow him down, and is that key to winning?
Well, the Rams slowed him down last week. I mean, he averaged less than 4 yards a carry, but they didn't win the game because of Cordarrelle Patterson went off with his rushing attack. I mean, he had 3 carries for over 100 yards. And he's a wide receiver. The Vikings have a lot of weapons now. You know, when you think of Peterson and Patterson, and then the tight end Rudolph, and then offensive coordinator North Turner has got, you know, he has coached some of the great running backs in the history of the NFL, and Eric Dickerson and Emmitt Smith, and then in LaDainian Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. So he's got to be very excited about having Adrian Peterson to hand the ball off to.
I can only imagine. Which means, though, that if you're able to get that running game, in theory, it sets up the pass game. I know that, you know, that's been the case for offenses for all of eternity. And, you know, is this a team that's capable, you know, with, you know, Turner's instruction now, that can burn you deeply with a guy like Patterson and maybe a guy like Jennings on the other side?
Well, yeah, I think Jennings is really the key because he's the veteran. There's not a lot of playing time with the other wide receivers. Patterson is a dangerous player, but he is still young, and Jennings is a, you know, seasoned veteran, so That's a good combination to have. They're going to try and get Patterson the ball as much as possible on that little fly sweep. They ran it three times last week against the Rams, and one of the times they ran it, he went for 68 yards. He's a tremendous athlete, one of those guys that can turn a kickoff into a touchdown. He's done that a couple of times in his young career. So he's so dangerous, and the combination of the two, and you add in the tight end, I mean, that's a perfect situation.
All right, let's flip it to the other side for a moment. We've also had some issues here, as I'm sure you're now aware, Dan. Last week, Tom Brady was on the injury list because of a left calf issue. Now, having been a quarterback of some repute yourself in your playing days, how could a left calf issue affect a quarterback? And do you think it might have affected Tom last week at all?
Well, he says it doesn't. I'll take him for his word at that. But anytime you have a leg injury as a quarterback, it's going to affect your throwing, because whether it's your right leg where you push off, or if it's your left leg as you land, if you're a right-handed quarterback, that will affect the way the ball comes out. It's not an easy thing to throw. I mean, it's pointed on both ends, and it's sometimes hard to keep in a spiral. But, you know, any leg injury to a quarterback has got to be something you think about. And when you see, you know, a performance that Tom had against Miami, then, you know, you're thinking, no, maybe the leg did bother. But if he says it didn't, I got to believe him.
Sure. All right. Now, as you look at Minnesota defensively, this is a team that struggled defensively in a lot of ways last year. What impresses you the most about, especially some of the newcomers, that they're having to step up and play significant roles? I know that, you know, Everson Griffin now is in a starting role in defensive end. You know, a guy like Linval Joseph, who came over as well and has had some success even against the Patriots because of his time with the New York Giants. Who do you look at on that Minnesota defense and say, wow, that guy can be a playmaker?
Well, you mentioned a couple of them. I mean, with Griffin, he had two sacks last week against the Rams. In the secondary, Harrison Smith had an interception that he returned 81 yards for a touchdown. But keep your eye on Anthony Barr, the linebacker, the first-round pick out of UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
A tremendous athlete, was in on a lot of tackles against the Rams, and he's got the ability to rush the passer, but also athletic enough to play in a pass defense. So those are three guys. You know, the other thing is at each level, Griffin at the defensive line, Bart linebacker, and Harrison as the safety.
That's pretty cool. You know, I know that was highly thought of coming out of, you know, UCLA, as you said, and he's caught my attention at least early from the little that I've seen of the Vikings thus far this year, and I think he can be a very, very good player for them, as you suggested. Who's this game more important for? Minnesota for keeping up the momentum they started last year, or the Patriots trying to get off the schneid from an 0-1 start?
Well, you never want to start a season 0-2, so I would say that it's very important for the Patriots to put together their type of game, both offensively and defensively. We did not see that last week against Miami. And as far as, you know, keeping the momentum going for the Vikings, sure, you'd like to, and you'd like to open up your season at home with a win. They won on the road last week against St. Louis, but I got to believe that for New England, this game is more critical.
We will look forward to listening to you and Ian on the broadcast on Sunday, and thanks a lot for taking some time out of your day today, Dan.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on, man.
Sure. Dan Fouts, NFL on CBS, paired up with Ian Eagle on Sunday for the broadcast. Patriots and Vikings, the kickoff at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and right here in the playbook with us. Okay, now let's get back to some other emails and some other score predictions to wrap up the rest of the program. I mentioned, I think, James in Ellensburg, Washington had 34-17 for the Patriots over the Vikings. Joel from Connecticut says, John, I'm going Pats 45, Vikings 35. I see a shootout until Revis turns the game around. Ooh, okay. All right. Josh in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's always great to hear that you're back on Patriots Radio. It's been since last season that I last had a chance to call a write. I've been listening. But between the real estate market picking up a bit around here, commissioning a fantasy football league full of my bleephead friends, and having my firstborn child on the way, congratulations, Josh. I have been keeping busy. Unfortunately, I don't have a ton of time to talk. And he goes through some of the other issues here in his life. Great. But he does say, I predict the Pats will win 34-21. 34-21, says Josh in Seville. Dave in Lancaster, California. Patriots 27, Vikings 12. Patriots don't give up any touchdowns. They give up 4 field goals. Arlene says, but she didn't tell me where she's writing from, Patriots 31, Vikings 28. 31-28. Okay. Excellent. Let's check social media here. A couple of others. Eric, tweeting me at JR Broadcaster says, Pats win 27-17. Gronk gets in the end zone again for another Gronk spike. Here's another Mark who says Pats win 31-20. Gronk with a big game. Let's go back to Facebook as well. Let's see. Do we have any other? Oh, here we go. I've got to make sure that this is refreshed just a little bit. There we go. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And here it comes. Brett says, okay, John, I always look for the Patriots to blow out every team every time I make a Patriots prediction. But I hate what I saw last week. I've had to temper down my enthusiasm a bit. I believe the Patriots will win, but only by 2. So he says, my prediction, Patriots 23, Vikings 20. That's 3. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Okay, 3. Patriots will win, but Patriots Nation will have the questions from week 1 go unanswered, largely. Sean says, I think this game is going to be a close one. Right now I'm leaning 27-14. I still, you know, geez, still 2 possessions, 2 touchdowns there, Sean. He says 27-14 Patriots win. I think the offensive line will play better this week, but defense will have its hands full trying to slow down Adrian Peterson. Anyways, regarding the Ray Rice situation, I concur with your opinion that Commissioner Goodell should not be fired unless it comes out that he knew about the tape but still went with the light 2-week suspension. But I don't think he did. Anyways, have a good weekend. Go Pats. Okay. Think we got in all the scores. So that leaves me then with my prediction. I've actually been hemming and hawing. Going back and forth generally is what that indicates. Yeah, I know. You're going to leave the timpani roll, right? I have all week, like a couple of our callers today, in fact, said if this were early in the week on Tuesday, there's no doubt I'd predict the Vikings to win. But as you kind of dive into it a little bit more and you kind of realize what the Patriots are going to be up against, as I opened up the program with today, the game basically falls down into 2 categories in my estimation. Number 1, slowing down Peterson. Now, again, as you heard Dan Fouts just tell us, he didn't have a great game last week in St. Louis, and they throttled the Rams 34-6 on the road, no less. But it was Cordarrelle Patterson, that had the big game because of those running those jet sweeps. The running game is still the focus for the Patriots defensively because they failed to do anything about it against Miami, letting the Dolphins gouge them for 191 on the ground. So, mission 1, slow down the run. Make Matt Castle one-dimensional. You can do that, then I think you're taking a step in the right direction. Clearly, when you're on the road, you've got mistakes that are way more overemphasized, and that means the Patriots cannot have turnovers, and they had, you know, a couple of them that, you know, that killed them in the second half of the game at Miami last week. And you can't have mistakes in the kicking game either, like the block punt. Can't have that. And you can't have mistakes with your guys committing penalties, like we saw with the defensive holding and the roughing the passers that we saw last week, which were drive killers for the Patriots. There must be attention paid to mistakes, especially when you're on the road. If the Patriots can keep themselves from self-inflicted wounds and can control the running game, they can win the game on Sunday. I think Steven Gostkowski wins it. I think it's going to be 23-20 New England. That's what I think. But don't be surprised if this team is 0-2 and we're nitpicking more next Tuesday. It's a very strong possibility. I'm not convinced that Minnesota is explosive enough on offense, but then again, we weren't convinced that Miami was either last week. So I think it's going to boil down to who makes the least amount of mistakes. If the Patriots can get one more stop, they've got to be able to force Minnesota off the field. They've got to be able to get Minnesota into some 3-and-outs. They got to get off the field, and they didn't do that until late in the game last week against Miami. So the defense has got to step up. I think this win is going to be largely based on the defense's ability to adjust from what we saw last week. I think the Patriots offense will be okay although they certainly didn't show it in the second half last week. But I think it's closer to being okay than the defense. It's also time for the defense to show us a little about what we thought we might get before this season started. And we didn't see it. And then what we saw last week, I think everybody was disappointed in. Defense needs to step up in this one, kids. All right. Hope you enjoyed the program. Good stuff today, Kev. Thanks to Dan Fouts. Thanks to all of our guests as well inside the playbook today. Russell Baxter was with us earlier today. And, of course, we had from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, Brian Murphy, for joining us in the opening hour. If you missed any of that, if you tuned in a little bit late, make sure you tune in on the podcast once it gets loaded up here on the website, because we had some really good stuff today. And great participation by you. Hopefully we get a winner for a yearbook for next week. And we'll be back same patch time, same patch channel. On Tuesday, Nitpick Tuesday, and hopefully it'll be good things to nitpick about. Bill and Anthony coming up next with Fantasy Football Champs right here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.